I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. This week, marijuana will be legal in Canada. A new book looks at pot and just how it might better one's life. The Little Book of Cannabis, How Marijuana Can Improve Your Life, is the timely book by Amanda Siebert, who joins me now. There's a lot of research in the book as to the benefits of weed, whether it can help one get a better night's sleep or help with exercise and weight loss. Historically, marijuana has had a benefit to cancer patients, and I'll get Ms. Siebert to tell us about other practical applications she's found out in the course of writing this book. There's been a lot of confusion around cannabis, whether it's a gateway drug or addictive or makes one crazy. Those are just some of the things she also clarifies in the book. Amanda Siebert is an award-winning journalist and photographer who was the first ever cannabis editor at the Georgia Strait. The foreword of the book is written by Rav Ivker, a holistic family doctor based out of Boulder, Colorado. Amanda will be making two presentations later this month at the Vancouver Health Show, the 27th and 28th of October. As well, she'll be part of A Night of Noir in North Vancouver, the 30th of October. Amanda's Twitter handle is @Amanda_Siebert. This new book is published by Greystone Books. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Amanda Siebert. Ms. Siebert, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me, Joel.
Thanks for joining us. So I've never done pot, and people listening to this might be terribly surprised by that. I probably won't after the 20th, but I thought the book was rather informative because a lot of people like me, you know, who might have been, say, uninformed about it all or have hang-ups about it, I guess it just allayed some of those things. How did the book come about?
Well, the book sort of came about while I was working as the cannabis editor at the Georgia Strait newspaper here in Vancouver. I was sort of spending a lot of time writing about the industry, tackling it from different angles, you know, strain reviews and, of course, news and all these other things. But one area I really enjoyed writing about was how cannabis affected people who were dealing with health complications. And so an editor at Greystone Books, a publishing company here in Vancouver, saw my work there. And I guess he sort of saw an opportunity for a Canadian book that really wasn't on the market yet. And so we sort of threw some ideas back and forth about what that might look like. And I guess the result is this chapter, or this 10-chaptered book, each one sort of talks about a different way that cannabis can be used to improve your life. And so that's sort of how it came about. It sort of started with my work at the Strait.
So let's talk about some of the fiction, some of the confusion about pot that's still out there. So a lot of, prohibitionists propagate these things. I mean, is pot a gateway drug for harder drugs, say?
In my mind, I would say no, it's not. I just think back to my own experience and, you know, other stories that we hear from people who use cannabis and who have maybe tried it. And I think alcohol is a little more deserving of that title of gateway drug. I feel like it's definitely a substance that sort of might encourage people to go deeper, if you will. But cannabis, I think, is we're seeing it used more and more as not a gateway drug, but what people are calling an exit drug. Mm. So a substance that can help people sort of lower or maybe even cease their use of opioids and other prescription drugs. We're seeing that happen quite a bit with cannabis, you know, having it being used as a sort of adjunct therapy for people that might suffer from chronic pain, things like that. And they're finding that when they use cannabis, they don't have to use as much of their prescription drugs. And in some cases, they find that eventually they're able to taper off of all medications and just use cannabis. So as far as the gateway drug thing goes, I think that's sort of been debunked a little bit by a few different studies. Sure, there are still some people that sort of propagate that idea, but I think cannabis is definitely more of an exit drug than a gateway drug.
Now, well, what about the idea that it's addictive? Because people say that people shouldn't do pot because they'll get addicted to it. And I mean, what have you seen amongst users in terms of, say, being able to stop using it? Say,
totally. So, in terms of cannabis users who perhaps like to use a lot, from an outside perspective, we might see this as dependence. But I think many people who use cannabis, they're able to sort of taper their use. There's a lot more intention, I think, that goes into cannabis use than substances, a lot of the time people do have a reason, a purpose for their use. Is cannabis addictive? I think, you know, anything really can be addictive. I think using cannabis too much eventually, you know, you will sort of start to see the scales tip where you'll start to kind of experience some negative side effects. Whereas if you're able to kind of control your consumption, you know, start low, go slow. This is a sentiment that I repeat over and over in my book. That will sort of prevent you from obtaining, you know, or getting this higher tolerance that will lead you to consume more cannabis. So, yes, I say, you know, for sure, it could be addictive if you're a person who perhaps has an addictive personality.
Right.
But I think it's a lot more sensation than is true, I guess.
Well, we'll get into the benefits of the myriad benefits of pot in just a sec. But the other thing I was just thinking about as we're talking is sort of the fear mongering that we're hearing, and that pot could be laced with something else, a more dangerous drug. I mean, the research has shown that that's not the case. Like, one would not see fentanyl in their pot, right?
No. I mean, it hasn't happened yet. That's been debunked on Snopes and all sorts of those kind of websites online. I think, you know, again, that's sort of something where you see perhaps a police officer who's misinformed, or, you know, people think that this is a common thing, but, you know, it wouldn't really make sense for a street-level drug dealer to cut their cannabis with fentanyl.
Yeah.
So I think that is definitely a worry that is perhaps not warranted.
So the book has a lot of the benefits that marijuana has, and in the course of writing the book, what surprised you in terms of say, some of the good things that can come about because of pot?
Well, I think if we look at cannabis and its pharmacology, you know, the different things that its compounds can do, I think one of the more exciting, fun chapters to write was the chapter on how cannabis can improve your sex life. I think, you know, it's definitely something that when I tell people that this is an idea, this is a thing, you know, their eyes kind of go wide and they're really curious about what that might look like. But I found that to be definitely one of the more exciting things, especially looking at, you know, some of the historical references, how it was used by, you know, ancient Egyptians, how, you know, this concept of cannabis as an aphrodisiac is certainly nothing new. That definitely was one of the more interesting, I guess. I mean, it was all really interesting, but perhaps the most fun was.
And then that's chapter 6, if people want to go to that. And you mentioned, say, the ancient uses of it, historical use of it was Queen Victoria. She used it to, allay her menstrual cramps.
Yeah, definitely. That's something we hear often. Other uses for it as well in that context. I mean, it's definitely something that, you know, I mentioned kind of the low dose idea here. So it's definitely something that if you're intrigued by the idea of using cannabis in the bedroom, you know, obviously starting low, going slow, all those things are very important as well.
Yeah, cancer patients, of course, have used it for symptoms of the treatment of the disease. So when did it become, say, taboo? I guess a lot of the fear-mongering that we've talked about already, a lot of the bad press that pot has gotten, when did that start? I mean, does that go back from the beginning as well?
I think that probably started, in 1900s in Canada and in the United States. I mean, in Canada, we didn't really see we saw cannabis made illegal in Canada in 1923.
Mm-hmm.
But after it was made illegal in the United States in the 1930s, that's when we really saw this idea that cannabis was bad, that it would make people go crazy, that it would lead to violence and things like that. We sort of started, you know, hearing those ideas more consistently, if you will, after, you know, all of this happened in the United States, where, you know, marijuana was really vilified. It was made to be this dangerous substance, and it was lumped in with opioids and cocaine and other substances at the time. And so I think, you know, it's been something that we've been dealing with for a while, and legalization really allows us to kind of reframe that topic, that subject, and look at it, hopefully, without the stigma that has been created. I mean, if you think back to, you know, the classic example is the film Reefer Madness. The idea that, you know, young people who use cannabis would do bad things, and women who use it would be promiscuous, and all these sort of weird harebrained ideas that we definitely don't, at least most of us, don't really prescribe to anymore when it comes to cannabis. So, yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see how that changes.
And in terms of users or the usage of pot, the cohort, the demographic that's using it, that will use it in greater numbers will be the boomers, won't they?
I think so, for sure. Yeah, I think the seniors definitely in the United States are the fastest growing demographic of cannabis users, and if we look at how cannabis can be used for the elderly, I mean, chronic pain is something that many people deal with. You know, as you get older too. I mean, how many prescription drugs are our grandparents on? You know, so many different things. And I think cannabis really does have an application in this realm because it can take care of so many different things. And so instead of having your grandma or grandpa on, you know, 9 or 10 different medications, perhaps that can be sort of brought down or reduced by introducing cannabis. You know, I cover several topics in the book that actually all sort of may or may not also apply to seniors. So, you know, seniors often have trouble sleeping. You know, perhaps they're stressed out. They're in a living situation that is not ideal. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're, like I said, they're dealing with pain. They're dealing with all these other things that cannabis can really provide relief from. So I think we are going to see a huge increase in the number of cannabis users who are sort of in that baby boomer demographic, if you will.
In the book, you talk about Ross Rebley. I had him on the show one time to talk about his career as a snowboarder. Mm. But what I found interesting in your book was that, because he has had the perception of being, I guess the poster boy, if you will, for pot in the last 20, 25 years. It did have a benefit. It did have a benefit in his career in terms of say, the recovery, the physical recovery from, say, the sport itself of snowboarding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was actually really interesting to chat with him. I had a grin on my face the entire time because hearing about someone who used cannabis in the early 90s when, you know, there wasn't really as much information about it as there is now. And in the way he used it, you know, I read about it in the book how, you know, he'd wake up every morning at 5 o'clock and have coffee and toast and some cannabis. And, you know, he'd make it up the mountain for the earliest runs, and all his friends who had stayed out drinking that night, you know, they would be late to the good runs. And,
yeah.
Just hearing, you know, how, after a day of, you know, shooting down the mountain, how cannabis not only did it help, you know, relieve his aches and pains at the end of the day when he was, you know, struggling after a lot of physical activity, it also, the way he describes it, is it makes the task at hand seem less, you know, less big, less scary. So if you're an athlete and you're doing, you know, long races or big events, it sort of applies to that idea that cannabis can help you sort of take your mind off the you know, the gravity of it all.
Yeah. We also, the perception is using pot would say give you the munchies. But for a lot of these athletic people or people who exercise, it is useful in terms of weight management, is it?
That's true. Yeah, that is true. So munchies, you know, we get this idea because it's sort of repeated throughout pop culture. We have these, you know, characters that sort of play up this idea that cannabis users are lazy stoners who just eat junk food. But in terms of athleticism, in terms of weight management, actually there's a study that I mentioned in the book that followed cannabis users for 15 years, and it found that individuals who used cannabis had lower blood pressure, they had a more consistent waistline, over that 15 years, they had lower markers across the board for cardiac disease. And so I think that's a really interesting thing to consider, because, you know, we do have this idea that cannabis just makes you hungry, but
yeah.
Depending on the chemical compounds in the cannabis you're consuming, there are actually a few cannabinoids. One of them is called THCV, that is actually thought not to increase your appetite, but to suppress it. So there are certain strains of cannabis that you can find that are higher in this cannabinoid, and the idea is it's not
going to
make you want to eat.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. I mean, not all pot is the same pot. And once legalized, you can go to one of these shops and speak. I guess they're called bud tenders. Is that right?
I'm not sure what the name of them is going to be in the new legal regime.
Yeah,
But historically, they have been known as bud tenders. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they can guide you through, say, the different varieties, and whatever your problem might be, whether it's sleep deprivation or anxiety, they can find the right, kind of pot for you, right?
Mm-hmm. That's sort of the way that it has been until this point in Vancouver with, you know, our vast array of dispensaries.
Right.
There are really so many of them here. I do think we are going to see a few changes in the legal market in terms of what people can, you know, I guess now we're sort of losing a little bit of that, the idea with dispensaries in Vancouver is a lot of them started out as medicinal. So I think we might see a move away from that sort of medicinal framework in terms of, you know, dispensaries and legal retail shops in Vancouver. But it'll be interesting to see how people sort of are able to integrate all of this information that we've learned and that we're continuing to learn, about what cannabis can do.
And so the other thing that I found fascinating was that it's not just smoking, say, a joint or vaping it. Cooking with cannabis, I mean, that's something that's happening a lot now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think, it's definitely one of the, it's become a popular way to consume. In Canada, we won't have legal edibles for at least a year after legalization because the federal government is still working on hammering out those regulations. But if we do look, you know, down to the United States, the edibles market in states with legal cannabis is absolutely huge. And we actually have some really, really well-established and also some kind of up-and-comers cannabis chefs in Vancouver who have really been working to sort of bring food and cannabis together. And it's really neat, I think, an interesting way for you to consume. But also, you know, once you start combining those cannabinoids, different flavors of food and stuff, you can get some really, really interesting results for sure.
And cannabis as a superfood, I mean, the benefits there, I mean, what do some of those say?
For sure. So typically, you know, we associate the benefits with cannabis use with the buds. You know, the flower on the plant that contains THC, CBD, all the valuable terpenes that give it its aroma. But the cannabis plant, the other parts of it, so let's say the fan leaves, they can also be used for their nutritional benefit. They don't contain the same cannabinoids and terpenes that are found in the bud, in the flower, but they do contain high amounts of magnesium, lots of other really good things for you, antioxidants, things like that. And I've heard of these being included in, you know, your morning breakfast shake. I know a woman who makes pesto with them,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I know actually quite a few people who really refer to cannabis as a green leafy vegetable. It's got a lot of those nutrients packed into it, and even, you know, the raw flour the flour that I was mentioning earlier that has those cannabinoids and terpenes that we typically smoke or inhale, that can also be used in its raw form, and that contains a lot of the similar compounds and terpenes that you'll find in the dried product, of course. So lots of different ways to integrate cannabis into your diet if that's something you're interested in doing.
Yeah. Well, what will October 17 mean for, say, the criminal element in the pot business? Mm-hmm. I mean, legalization, does that change who's involved in terms of getting pot to users, say?
It will change things in places like Vancouver. Well, I mean, it's going to change things all over the country, but, you know, in Vancouver we are in a little bit of a bubble. We do have these dispensaries that are throughout the city and in other parts of Metro Vancouver as well. And I think the biggest change that we're going to see is that those dispensaries are not going to be carrying the product that a lot of people who are going to them now are used to. So instead, we're going to see product from licensed producers, which are licensed by Health Canada, to grow cannabis. And that'll be, once stores are licensed through the province and they have the correct municipal licensing, they can apply to obtain that cannabis from a provincial wholesaler. And in British Columbia, that is the liquor distribution branch. So we will see a change in, the supply, the products that are available. There are concentrates, topicals, other things that you can find in dispensaries right now that you may not be able to find after October 17th because those products will not be regulated until next year. So I think we're going to see a little bit of a change for sure in how those operate, but it's definitely 1.0, and I think hopefully the government learns from what works and what doesn't work, and we'll see some changes down the line.
For the user, let's just say the pot user now, does legalization mean that they'll get a better quality pot because it'll be regulated, say, as you mentioned, by Health Canada?
I think it depends on how you look at quality. I think you will definitely be seeing cannabis that is lab tested, which is very important for people who are dealing with, different health conditions,
right. People
who have weakened immune systems. It's important that the cannabis that they're using is clean. So that is definitely a huge step in quality for Canadian cannabis consumers. The thing is, these, factory, giant warehouses where cannabis is being produced right now, it's a lot harder for growers to pay attention to each individual plant and give it the care and attention that it needs. And so the quality in terms of, if you're a heavy-duty cannabis consumer and you're used to quads or, top-shelf product, you're going to see things that are starting to approach that from the legal market. They're not quite up there in the quadruple A category, but eventually I think as more and more growers and producers come online, especially these craft BC bud growers that we have here in British Columbia who grow some excellent, just beautiful, beautiful product, I think we'll see that quality start to go up for sure.
Amanda, it's been fascinating to talk to you, and as I was telling you before we started, it's a very interesting book, and so congratulations on it, and good luck with it. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this as well. It's great.
The book is called The Little Book of Cannabis, How Marijuana Can Improve Your Life. It's published by Greystone Books. Its author, Amanda Siebert, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.